What's up, guys? It's Andy from Apocalypse Training Systems. It's the Complete Strength Podcast. This is just an intro because when I recorded the actual podcast, I forgot to do the little music in the background. So this is kind of an extra intro before the intro. All right, so I'll let you listen to it now then. Hope you guys enjoy it. Welcome to episode 15 of the Complete Strength Podcast. I'm Andy Lavery, head coach at Apocalypse Training Systems. This is the first podcast of 2019. It's been a mega busy few weeks. So yeah, so just getting straight into it. I put on my Instagram. If you're not following me on Instagram, it's apoc_laves, L-A-V-E-S. If we'll ask some questions on here for each week, I'll be taking questions on there, plus other stuff that I come across through the week as well. So a couple of things I'm going to talk about. I've got a good few questions. And also I'm going to finish off with something that I've come across with speaking to someone who came down to talk about training at our gym. Wanted to join our team here to do a bit of work. And we got training, we got talking together, having a chat, and it come across a few things that I didn't realise was a problem. Not on her account, not at all. But yeah, I'll talk about that in a bit more detail at the end. So going straight into the questions. So the first one I got was off Adam, our other coach. He likes to throw a few questions in now and then. So it says, squats versus deadlifts, pros, cons. All right, so the inner voice in me first thing says there are no cons to squats and deadlifts, but there's pros and cons to all exercises. It's not usually the exercise; it's usually the load, the intensity, and the dosage. If you're a total newbie to a squatter, so squats a general term. There's so many different variations of squats. There's, you know, just a bodyweight squat, there's a box squat, there's a goblet squat, barbell squat, front squat, safety bar squat. So many different variations. So from a newbie, the pro is it gets you to learn. I think it's a great tool just squatting to a box. I've learned the hip hinge on a hip hinge movement. I get tons and tons of feedback. Visual feedback from a person who's just come in that's never really squatted before. Maybe do what I call the class squats, where they're kind of a quarter squat looking, and they blast off 20 squats. And if you put them all together, you might get, if you added them all up in the fractions, you might get like 3-4 maybe, because they're all kind of like quarter squats. We don't really get power, well, get nowhere near power, they'll just about break the hinge. So we try to get some out of that kind of class type squat. Just introducing a chair. It's something that they do hundreds of times a day, getting up and down of chairs. It's really easy to let people feel where the feet should be for them and their body mechanics. So pros for squats is done correctly. They're a great learning tool. I think they're a great learning tool for a hinge. So learning the hinge, that will progress onto other things like the deadlift. Cons of the squat, same as the cons of any exercise, it's just poor management of it. So loading too early, too much volume too soon, too much load. Squatting every day if you're not quite used to it. If you are used to it, squatting every day, well, again, that depends on the type of person. So some people can squat every day and be absolutely fine with it. But again, that's matching the load and the volume and the frequency. That's matching it to the individual. So it's more, for me, it's more to a programming mistake that makes the cons. That's the cons of any exercise. It's usually a mistake in programming than it is in the actual exercise. And I'll say for the same for deadlifts. I mean, pros, it's just an awesome exercise to master. It's something that you can spend your whole life trying to get better at, and done correctly, it can so much carry over into other types of training. For newbies, we tend to regress it. So it's kind of, I start off with a kettlebell on top of a box. It could be like 10 inches, 20 inches off the floor. We'll start from there. Well, I won't start from there, but when we first start using a load, we'll start from that position. If it's before we even get to that, we're probably looking at hinge movement. So we could be using a PVC pipe. There's a great, there's something on my YouTube where I've done like a hip hinge tips. So ways to try and get to improve your hip hinge or to practice hip hinge if you've never done it before. And all the hip hinge, if you're not too sure what a hip hinge is, it's just moving your hips back while keeping a brace in your abs. So your core's braced, back's nice and keeping straight, so it's not getting that spaghetti back. And it's just initially moving from the hip, treating the hip like a hinge joint and not getting the movement from your lumbar spine, so not getting lumbar flexion, but try to pick something up. So it's a bit of a cop-out answer. But it's never, I always find the pros and cons to an exercise is never a black and white answer. It depends on other factors. There are no bad exercises. It's just bad implement. It's poor implementation of it or not really planning how to implement it properly in your program, depending on what your training age is, et cetera. So yeah, pros are, they're amazing. If you can add them in your program, by all means, add them in your program. I would regress it to the point where you can actually learn to get better at it. While we're going on squats as well, what I didn't mention was depth. Just because you can't squat ass to grass doesn't mean you can't squat. There are actually very few ass to grass squatters. All right, so parallel is the goal, but depending on what your sport is, again, it's application. If your sport doesn't require that you have to squat parallel or below parallel, if you're in a sport like basketball or football or soccer, if MMA, something like that, something where you're not squatting all the way down to get an explosive movement, then you could squat parallel for that fundamental strength. When you're looking at developing that and putting it into power, then you might be looking at like reduced range of movement. But again, that goes to, it's all based on the individual, what the individual needs really. I hope I've covered all that question. If I've not, pull me up on it. Dave Green, shout out to Dave Green, Strongest Version. If you were to pick just three exercises for a complete beginner to repeat every time they trained, what would, and it cuts off there, it must be like a word count. So it's kind of like run out on there. But I'm guessing it's, if I was to pick three exercises for a complete beginner to repeat every time they trained, what would they be? It's a tough one, that, because there's exercises and there's movement patterns. So I'm just going to grab my drink. I'm not sponsored by Monster, but it's kind of fueling me through this cut at the moment. So if Monster's listening, but sort me out for a couple of free cases, that'd be okay. So if we're going to pick three exercises or three types of exercises, so if you had to, I'd be tough to be nailed down to pick three specific exercises. If I was going to do movements, I'd probably leave out a push, simply because a lot of the people that come to this gym are office workers and 9-to-5ers and people who are normal, who kind of live their life hunched over a desk, hunched over a computer, hunched over a steering wheel. So a lot of the time, pressing is not what they need in a postural sense. So I'll probably do a pull, some kind of pull variation. I'd do a squat and I'd do unilateral lower movements. So for a pull, it could be anything from as simple as YWTs, which is a really, really low level movement, but are very tough. if done properly. Wider cuffs, pull aparts, like low threshold stuff, working up to dumbbell rows, ring rows, pull-ups, chin-ups. Not everyone can do pull-ups and chin-ups. I know, but it's one thing I've noticed as well is when you're working with 9-to-5ers, when you're working with like athletes, they tend to be able to bust out quite a few chin-ups. But us regular people, when they come in from their office, a lot of them can't do pull-ups. We have to do some kind of regression. So it could be a banded assisted. It could be a barbell chin-up or a barbell pull-up, where we put the barbell around about chest height. We start seated on the floor, and then we're pulling ourselves up. So it's like a modified pull-up, really, or chin-up. So I'll do some kind of pull variation. I'll probably do more. Well, I would do more horizontal rows than I would do vertical rows, simply because it gets the scaps moving and closing together better. And you're hitting more of your back doing like horizontal movements rather than verticals a lot of the time. And if you've got kind of hunched over in that position where your shoulders roll forward, vertical rolls, what I've seen in the past, vertical pull can kind of aggravate that a little bit. Horizontal pulls tend to alleviate that a little bit. But I would use both, but I'd use more horizontals than verticals. What was the other one I picked? Squat, some kind of squat variation, simply because it's just for a necessity need, really. It's the one thing that we do probably tens, 100 times a day, getting up and down off chairs. So from a functional, using air quotes, standpoint, I'd use like that kind of squat variation, squat into a box, and it's just so good to develop. I do love squats. And I'd also use a unilateral movement, so it could be split squats, which I don't love as much, but I still do them. I don't think anyone likes split squats. Split squats are kind of those, I don't totally trust people who say that they really, really love split squats. I always think they've got a bit of a dark undercurrent. So split squats, sled pulls, single leg glute bridges, some kind of, just by using one limb at a time, so walking lunges, box step-ups, but I love box step-ups. So I'd use those. Those are three types of exercises. I'm sorry if you wanted three specific exercises, but I really, really struggled with picking specific ones, but they're the three movements that I'd focus on, for a beginner anyway. I mean, to be honest, if it was me and I only had to pick three exercises, I'd probably do that anyway. I would do more pulling than pressing. Just flicking through these. Yeah, the guys over at Stone Strength and Conditioning down in Stoke, I think. Weight cutting 24 hour prior versus same day. Now, I know I train a lot of the MMA guys, but I'm not in charge of anything like weight cutting. I wouldn't want to be in charge of anything with weight cutting, because I've not done it before, and there's people way better at things like that than I am. So I'm going to really cop out here and just say I couldn't really tell you. I don't know. I do have kind of views on cutting, and it's probably the same views as the people that do it, but it is what it is. Guys that I know a lot more, I've asked, so usually if I've got a cutting question or anything to do with that, so we're cutting for a fight, so basically if people not quite sure what I mean, is leading up to a fight or leading up to anything that's got a weight category, the athlete, competitor, fighter is going to cut weight. It's usually above that weight to start with, so they might be walking around a good few kilos over that weight. And they've got to cut to the weight that you need to fight in the day before the fight, and then you can rehydrate and so on. And there are different methods of weight cutting. So the questionnaire was all about weight cutting 24 hours prior versus same day cutting. I don't know. I know people to ask that could probably answer that question. So what I might do is I might ask a couple of the guys that I train and see what they say, see what they think. Also know a couple of people who do nutrition for fighters. So it's definitely a question that I could ask them and hopefully get them to shed a lot more light on what I could. So I'm sorry I can't answer that, buddy, but it's not in my field that. So sorry about that, mate. Next one is from Callum Angus. How you doing, mate? Some great training with Lee Moran as well. I've been watching on there. Some great lifts. What advice would you give for a new personal trainer getting into the business, or someone wanting to get? And again, it's cut off a little bit, so I'm guessing the question is just what advice would you give to a new personal trainer getting into the business? Now, for me, I mean, because I'm not, I know I might look old, well, I am old, but I've only been, most of my career was being, most of my adult, like, grown-up job was teaching. I've been working in classrooms, in a classroom environment for about 15 years. And I've been teaching for 12 of those. So a lot of my background is to do with teaching, and I only made the decision. So when I left school, I did my, it was called a BTEC Sports Science. So I did that. And then when I left school, when I left college after I did that, I just needed work. So I did a little bit of work. One of the jobs I ended up with was a classroom assistant. Classroom assistant, did a few extra courses, picked up my qualifications, got a basic teaching qualification, then went on to uni to do my level 5 in teaching. And I kind of went down that route, and I always wanted to be a personal trainer, I always wanted to coach people, I always wanted to work in a gym. But, you know, I got to 25 and, you know, I was married, 26, my first son came along, 30, my second son came along. And it was a case of, you know, I think the time's probably gone past and got to the point where I wasn't happy in my work. I was getting less and less happy in my work. And my wife knew what I wanted to do. She knew that I always wanted to work in a gym environment. I wanted to coach people. And I've always trained. I've always kept in debt. Always read articles, you know. I've read the same magazines that everyone else read when they were growing up. So I've always had a passion about training and keeping fit. And I just made a decision that that's what I was going to do. I took the leap. So it's coming up to, it was 6 years ago I made the decision. It's what I was going to do. I said, right, I'm going to take up some extra clients, or maybe one or two clients. So I was building from total scratch. I was at a disadvantage because even though I was kind of old at like 34, I wasn't really experienced. Well, I wasn't experienced. I didn't have any qualification. I mean, I was experienced in training. I knew how to keep fit. I knew basic advice, but I didn't really do any studying on it. So what I did from there was be prepared. This is my first bit of advice, is be prepared to do a lot of shit for free. I don't think I even earned any money for the first 12 months, maybe, or any money that I did earn was very little, and it just got straight invested back into my business. So I did a lot of work for free, and it started off with running boot camps on the local park. Pretty much how everyone starts. From what I hear, that's pretty much how everyone starts. We're just like running a class every now and then, getting them on there. And it's there were some days where you might get 10 people in. There were some days you might get one or two. And there was a lot of times where I'd turn up and just no one was there. And those are pretty desperate times, because they're the kind of times when you're thinking, am I making the right decision? And all this was like, I was still teaching at the time. I was still teaching full time. So I'd I'd get up early in the morning before everyone woke up. I'd do my own training. I'd start writing plans of how to get people in for groups. I used to write plans for my boot camps. And then I'd do my 9-to-5 job. And then I'd go out and I'd hang around the park to get people to train. Obviously, I had Facebook as well and things like that. So, and a few friends that wanted to train with me, which I still keep, and people who weren't my friends at the time, but have now become friends, and I still keep in touch. And in fact, one of the ladies still is training with me now. So yeah, I did a lot of stuff for free. There's a lot of times when I thought it's just not going to take off because no one wants to train. Why do people want to train with me when there's so many good people out there? When I was still teaching 9-to-5, when I started getting more clients, I used to put on a group. And it was like 5 in the morning group, it was a 5 a.m. crew. So I did that at 5 a.m. I'd come home, kids would start to wake up. So me and the wife would get them ready for school, take them to school. Then I'd go to my 9-to-5 job. I'd come back, have my tea or dinner if you're posh. I've that with my kids and my wife. Then say, see you to them. I was out the door for about 5:30. And then I was coaching then doing another group. And I did that every day. And then when I got home from that, I probably spent 30 minutes with my wife before she went to bed, and then I'd stay up just reading the amount of stuff that I just read, everything that I can get my hands on, because I knew it was at a disadvantage. There's a lot of people out there to compete with, and the only way you can get to compete with people is that he's very, very good. So I just read as much as I could. So that was for about 18 months, and then I went part-time in my job. After I went part-time in my job, I was lucky enough to take on some more clients. And then 2.5 years ago, I made the jump and went full-time and not looked back since. But there's been tons and tons and tons of free stuff that I've given away. And I still continue to give away a lot of free stuff now, through articles, through training advice, through podcasts like this. I give away a lot of information on social media. And don't see it as like giving away stuff is you're going to hurt your pocket, because it doesn't. All it is a chance to showcase what you know. And people will buy into that. People buy into you. Which kind of leads on to my next thing is what I'd say is give a fuck about people. I can't even begin to stress that enough. People will see through someone who is there to look pretty. They'll see through someone who's there to look to chat up other girls that are in the gym. They'll see through people who are in it to make themselves look good rather than the client. Genuinely giving a fuck about someone speaks volumes, and it speaks louder than any other thing that you know. For me, someone who cares and is passionate about what they do, and they care about the person that they're training more than anything else, I'd pick that person over someone who had every single qualification that was available in their field, because stuff like that you can learn. If you're in it for the wrong reasons and you don't really care about the client, or the main attention is on yourself and how big you can make yourself, then you can't unlearn that. And that totally turns me off on someone that. If someone who cares, but they may not be having the greatest qualifications, you can learn all that shit. You can't unlearn being a dick. I'm not saying you are, Cal. I'm sure you're awesome. But I'm just saying that it's just, as in general, if you care about your clients, that will shine through. I promise you that will shine through. Don't worry about other people, because if you care, you can make that client feel like the best person and treat them like the best person, then you've got a client for life. And rightfully so, they should be treated a lot. They're giving you money for training, so they should be treated like the only person that's in the room. Other advice, social media. Keep on top of social media, because it's a good way to show your skills, but it's a good way to test you as well, because everything you've put out has got to be good quality. So you've got to make sure that stuff that you're putting out is true to yourself. It might not always be right. There'll always be someone who kind of disagrees with what you say, But as long as you're not giving out advice that is reckless or damaging, but it's honest to what you think, then that's fine. Just put more content out. I did have another one. What was the other one? I can't remember. Oh God, let's have a sip of this monster. That was it. Don't be afraid of admitting that you don't know something. I mean, I've just done it on the question before, talking about weight cut. Don't try and blag your way through an answer. If it's something that you genuinely don't know, just say, you know what, I don't know that, but I can find that out, or I can put through to someone that does know a lot more about that. It's the whole reason why I wanted to get, when I first opened this gym, it was the reason why I wanted to get someone in who was very, very good at rehab. And I'm so lucky to have Ben Cole here, because for me, he's the best guy I've ever met to do a rehab. He's the best rehab specialist I know. And I could have hoped for, really. So anything that comes in through injuries, where at first I'd kind of look up how to do it, and I'm never really comfortable. And to be honest, apart from a little bit of SMR, a bit of self-myofascial release, I don't give any rehab advice. I just refer on to Ben, because it's not my speciality. I'm not qualified in the subject. And even though I'm pretty sure what it could be, I've not got that professional qualification, or I'm not qualified to say that's what it is. So if I pass over to Ben, it's better for the client. They respect it more because you're giving them the best advice that you can give them. You're offering them a good service by being honest. And people respect that rather than try to bullshit your way through it, which it can be tempting to, especially at first, because at first you just think, oh, well, maybe I should know that. I should know this. Or if I don't know this, am I seen as like a bad trainer or a bad coach? It's not. You just learn as you go along. You know, eventually we'll learn about these things, but be honest. If you don't know something, just say, I don't know. Don't give advice that you're not qualified to do either. I think that's it. That was a long winded answer. I'm sorry for that. I did go off a little bit on that one. But longest, if you only take one bit from that, is just be honest to yourself. If you come across as honest, you'd be absolutely fine. And just prepare to put in a shit ton of work. Like consistently. There is no ease off. Are there questions? Is that it? That's all of them. All right. Yeah, just the four questions. I thought there was another one. Another one. This one. So, like I said at the beginning, this is what I wanted to talk about. It was a client that came, well, not a client at the time, but someone who came in inquiring about... a little bit of feedback there or something. It was someone who came in inquiring about training at our gym. She's not trained at our gym before. She just caught our gym in passing. I think it's one of her friends' trainer. So we're talking about just generally like what they're doing at the moment. So when they were talking about what they were doing, they were saying, you know, having a... They liked training, but they didn't like the advice that was being given. I think the person put the rates up or something like that, which is absolutely fine. People do put the rates up. The cost of living goes up. People are going to put the rates up at some point. And the issue wasn't really with that. It was more to do with some of the advice that I was getting. So we're talking about it straight away, and it wasn't like a bitch fest. I don't encourage bitch fests. I don't badmouth other people. I don't give it oxygen. It's something that I don't agree with. Then not everyone's going to agree with everything that everyone says, but never let it turn into a bitch fest. So we're just talking to this person anyway, and they were talking about she did tell me the person, but obviously I'm not going to say it because it's totally unprofessional. But the advice that we were given was for her nutrition. It was, for every meal that that person was taking, or for every meal that person was having, she had to take a picture of it and send it to the personal trainer. The personal trainer would then give them feedback and say if it's a good meal to have or if it's a bad meal to have. So the first thing that I did was probably the face that you're probably making now is, what the fuck? That was the nutrition advice. I said, what other advice was he getting? I said, the lady was telling me that was kind of it. They had some information given to them on their day one. But the long and bulk of it is that they did weekly weigh-ins and then they took pictures and they had to send the pictures of the food over to the trainer. Now, from all I hear, the trainer's a great person. But it's something that it's very, very inaccurate way of tracking nutrition. And plus, to have someone to deem your food good or bad isn't productive in trying to get a sustainable, and I'll use air quotes for healthy because that's another topic in itself, but a sustainable, healthy diet that you're not going to have any issues with, that you can eat without feeling guilty. There's no negative reinforcement of any food whatsoever. And just have just the old thought, it just sounds wrong of the old thought, just taking a picture and send it to someone and leaving it up to them to tell you whether you can eat that or whether you can't eat that. For me, it's just a bullshit way of just putting a nutrition plan together. For one, I got talking to another coach about this. I won't say the name because I'm not sure if they want to be involved, but I'm sure they're very, very opinionated on this anyway. But I was talking to another coach about this, and was set the point that he made was, and it nailed down to a T, is just on portion size. If you're looking at portion size alone, how do you know what's on that plate? What if it fits the calories and the macros? Now, I know if it fits your macros is quite a broad term, and it's not always that. It's a broad term, and it's not always the most healthiest of choices or the most nutritious of choices, and people kind of abuse the if it fits your macros a little bit. But if it's fitting your calories and if it's fitting your macros for the day, then why would it necessarily be a bad food choice? I mean, what decides whether a food is bad? Is it because it's what society says is a bad food? So, I don't know, regardless of what it is anyway. But to say that for one person, to say if it's a bad food is just kind of like, it's negligent really, because another point that he made was what if it looks really healthy but it's cooked in a load of oil, so you're adding a ton of calories to it there. One of the points that I said was what if the coach or the personal trainer had a bias towards certain diets. So what if they were vegan, or what if they did keto, what if they did paleo, what if they did, fill in the blank, whatever popular diet, whatever you want to call it, whatever diet is going to do. What if they had a bias towards that? So they said, right, because it doesn't coincide with what I think or with my thoughts on what a diet should be, it's a bad diet or it's a bad choice. Not to mention the fact that it's how food disorders start, having bad associations with food, good food and bad food. So if you have a coach that does that, just ask him. Just say, okay, I'm saying this is bad food. Can you tell me why? Can you tell me why in my food plan or nutrition plan or calories or whatever your goal is or whatever the setup is at the day one, why is that bad? Why is it not fitting? What are the pros and cons to it of having that? Ask them more questions about it. Don't just blindly say, they say, right, it's a bad food, you can't have that. Okay, I won't have that. It's how people just follow. There's one that I was reading as well. There's Lane Norton's just tagged a guy. Oh, it's a snake diet, but I can't remember the guy's name. And there's a YouTube. I've looked at this snake diet guy, and it's a clip from a YouTube video that's on his Instagram. I'm going off on a tangent here, but I'm getting to a point. And he was saying that the first thing, the minimum that you have to do, okay, minimum, And the way he starts his video off is, you kind of think it's trolling, but I hope it's trolling anyway. But the way he starts with the video is not at all fatty. He's calling people fat and calling people lazy. And he said, right, the minimum thing you have to do is a 72-hour fast. That is the minimum thing. And he makes that a very, very big point. And the minimum thing that he has to do in this diet is a 72-hour fast. That's just fucked up. I don't care what anyone says. The 72-hour fast for a total new beginner. I wouldn't do a 72-hour fast. I'd never recommend a 72-hour fast. There may be advantages to it. There probably are some kind of benefits. But to say that everyone's minimum is a 72-hour fast is just fucking ridiculous, because that just takes away all individualization of it. But yeah, going back to that point, ask more questions. If you want a successful, sustainable nutrition plan, and you want to be able to carry that on forward for the rest of your life, don't do extreme stuff. All right, just pick out some short, simple things. Start off with, if you've not got any structure, start off with like 3 or 4 meals a day. Average out your portions each day. I'll just go from there. Seek advice. If you don't know, seek advice from people that do know. And if it sounds like bullshit, go to someone else and ask them. Ask what their opinion is. Go to some respectable people that are good on nutrition. There's loads of people. Instagram's so good. In the way that there's so many good, respectable coaches out there with training and nutrition. But I do suppose as well, there's a lot of bad ones. The way I go off it, this is how I judge. All right, I'm not saying I'm right, but it kind of holds true. If you look for a coach, if someone says, oh, follow this person, they're good. If the majority of their pictures are of themselves with no top on or with their ass out, I won't follow them, because I don't think I can learn anything from them apart from what they look like with the clothes off. If a lot of their posts are about their clients or about studies or about stuff that's information, that's informative, that can help other people and not promote themselves, I'd study that. I'd follow those guys. That's my really short way of just following decent people on Instagram or Facebook or whatever. Yes, that's it. It's a bit of a long one today. I've not half gone on. So I'm going to finish my monster off. I'm going to do a couple of other jobs that I need to do today. And then I will see you guys later. So on this, if you like this podcast, I'm just trying to have a look on here. So it is based on Anchor, but you can listen to it on pretty much anything. You can listen to it on iTunes, which is kind of the majority of what people listen to now, isn't it? Or you can listen to it on Spotify as well. But please subscribe if you like this anyway. If you don't, then subscribe to something else. Subscribe to this if you like it. You can have a follow on... A lot of my information goes out on Instagram and on my Facebook page. I need to get my ass in gear about updating my website, because it's been so long since I've done that. And that's it. All right. Enjoy the rest of your week, guys. I'll speak to you soon. Take it easy.